If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Mike Ray, former cop and body double for a world-famous action star, was ready to put show business behind him when he was asked to do one last favor for Hollywood's hottest new actress. All he had to do was find her the necklace from a forgotten film and not get killed in the process. From the insane house parties of Malibu and the reclusive mansions of Beverly Hills to the scorching California desert, Mike finds himself in a scandal involving one of the world's most eccentric billionaires, the Nevada Mafia, and a sadistic Estonian porn kingpin. To find the necklace, he'll have to blow the lid off a secret buried in the California desert that stretches back to ancient Egypt, with an irresistible client who won't take no for an answer. If the job doesn't get him killed, she just might. Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main has been described as a fast-paced love child of The Big Lebowski and Indiana Jones. Find out why readers have made this book one of the best reviewed in all of Amazon. It's Hollywood Pharaohs by Andrew Main, available for only $2.99 on the Amazon Kindle store. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main. Joining me is Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Huzzah!
From now, Brian, you're actually in front of your set right now. You're about to go do a show in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, strangely enough, we usually record this at 10 p.m. Eastern, but I have a show at 10 p.m. Eastern, so we're doing an early edition, and I set up the show early, and so now I'm standing in front of an empty auditorium right in front of my stage. So as soon as we're done here, I'm going to do my crazy magic show.
Well, hold on a second. Can you confirm or deny that you're actually, are you not performing for the opening of Magic Mike and you're doing a totally different show?
Wait, no, I cannot confirm nor deny that at this time.
Boy, are they going to be disappointed.
Yes. I see an awful lot of lawbreakers here tonight.
That's Mr. Justin Robert Young, you hear?
Yes, doing my Matthew McConaughey as male stripper friend of Magic Mike impression.
Which sounds a lot like normal Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, it's kind of, he really only has one note, but it's an enjoyable note. Who doesn't enjoy a little Matthew McConaughey here and again?
You know, so let's get right down to brass tacks.
Bonnie the Invisible Wife used to work at an art gallery on 6th Street. A very sweaty Matthew McConaughey bought art from the store from her. And she didn't figure out until after he left that he was famous. And she was like, oh, but all she remembered was that he smelled like he had been doing a lot of physical labor.
Made him millions of dollars.
Just moving bales of pot.
So, Brian.
Yes, sir.
Let's fast forward a year and a half or so.
Right.
After the blessed arrival of your child.
Yes. The yet untitled Brian Brushwood Project.
Yes. You hear crying. Okay. You go downstairs.
All right.
Child's in tears.
Okay. That's normal. Babies get tears.
Wow. Like, ladies and gentlemen, collectors of Weird Things podcast ephemera, please take note and add it to the Wikipedia that the first recorded mentioning of Andrew Main terrorizing Brian's new child is, yes, on this podcast.
Okay, but anyway, so I walk in and yet untitled is crying.
Andrea or Justina.
There you go.
And if they're girls.
Yes, all right. So little Andrew, Justin Robert Brushwood is crying.
And you're like, what's the matter, little guy?
And of course, he doesn't answer because he's an infant.
It's 18 months. Could talk.
Okay, 18 months. All right. And what does he say?
Well, he's too busy crying. Why are you asking the kid to talk?
Man, right, see, well, I'm crying. See? Jeez. I'm real scared here, Pops.
You're asking the kid what's wrong, and the kid's looking at you funny because there's blood everywhere.
Okay. All right.
Which maybe in your Carney-style household, blood is a normal sight.
It's not, but okay. And so I go in, and there's blood everywhere. My kid's crying. I'm already in love with this idea. Yeah. And so are there any clues? What do I see around? First thing, of course, you check is the kid physically injured?
Yes.
Oh, where? What?
Kid's missing a fingertip.
No.
Yeah.
Not okay. No. Okay. So there's some kind of wild animal's got to be loose in here.
Well, let's go through the Brushwood household. Child's okay. Missing a fingertip. You immediately have decided that some wild animal's broken into your house and done this.
That's yes. I mean, first I check his mouth. He didn't bite off his own finger or anything, did he? Because you know that.
No, Brian.
There are kids where that happens. They're born and they don't realize it right away, but they have no ability to feel pain. They have no sensation whatsoever, and so they do things like they gnaw off their own fingers. It's horrific.
Man, that at that point. Like, I just have nothing but pity for that kid that it's like, you were not born in an era where, like, gladiators were a thing. Like you were just born in the wrong
Jackass?
Era.
Have you seen Jackass?
But that's, I mean, like, I want, like, killing for sport while everybody yells and cheers. Like, I mean, like, I don't know. At that point, you're like, man, you weren't a Viking. And that's my fault for having you now.
So, Schwitty is there. In tears, and missing a fingertip. And so, all right. So, not in its mouth. And the kid's like, why are you blaming me, Daddy? Why would you ask me?
I'm like, hey, kiddo, listen, grown-ups, we got to check some nutty things. And someone once told me you're a finger eater. And I thought maybe that it was true. But
all right, so you start off, to your credit, you did try to blame the idea that some vicious wild animal managed to make it into the house.
Right.
Then you blamed your own child.
Okay. Yes.
And it's not like you own knives or sharp objects.
Well, okay. Well, I certainly wouldn't leave any in the room, but is there scissors around? Was he doing an art project?
No. What happens if your child starts saying, you know, the history of finger eating goes back over 200 years? It just does your entire fire eating monologue. And you just look at him and say, wow, truly my seed has been passed along.
So... you look around the room and you see one of your dogs.
Oh my God! And
pick one of
right.
your dogs.
It's got to be. It's going to be Ollie. Ollie's terrified of children.
So Ollie, now you look at Ollie, and what do you say?
I walk over. I open up his mouth, and I start looking to see if there's any blood on the teeth or nothing.
Maybe a little blood, but maybe because he tried to lick the child to try to comfort the child.
Oh. I'm liking the scenario less and less. okay. Well then, I mean, well, if you suspect the dog.
I didn't suspect the dog. You did.
Well, I found blood in his mouth. Okay, so clearly
let's back up wild animals. Give me a scenario. What kind of wild animal would you maybe first have suspected?
Well, let me look. Is the window open? Cause I'm thinking like a badger comes in. Didn't we have a scenario where like a wild ferret came in and ate some kid's nose or something?
That was something else.
I know. That's what I'm thinking. That's why I think I'm like stuck in a weird thing scenario.
The house is locked. The doors are sealed. The alarm is on.
Oh, man. And if it's not my dog, I don't know why my dog would just run over and nip off a finger of a kid.
And the only guest in the house is me, who's traveling the country with his psychotic ferret circus.
I don't know, man. At this point, I'm thinking of mystery. Maybe check the AC system. Something creeping through the HVAC.
So it's kind of a very disturbing scenario, right?
Yeah, very much so.
Kind of a parent's nightmare, right?
Yeah, it pretty much is.
Which is why it's crazy that it happened to Barack Obama.
I want you to do a slow turn around the house. Let's say you found out that, by the way, that Ollie turned out to be 100% pit bull.
Okay.
Didn't look it, but.
No, what happens is he like flexes and all the hair sheds and he just flops it and all of a sudden he's a pit bull. You're like, ah, what do you know? We had a pit bull this whole time.
So you turn around the room.
All right. So I see the pit bull and I think, okay, then clearly it's got to be the dog.
The dog's like, I'm getting a lawyer. You ain't pinning this on me. The dog's like,
Cochran,
hey.
Cochran, I'm getting Cochran. Cochran's
he's like, hey, idiot, look around the room. Look around the room.
What else do I see? I mean, I assume, you know, toys. And
okay, just tell me what direction you're looking.
I'm looking left all the way around.
So you see a couch.
Wait a minute.
Bookshelf.
Wait a minute. I'm going to look up because that's not where I would think to look.
You see a ceiling.
And nothing on the ceiling?
No. Blood. There's blood on the ceiling, Brian.
Okay.
Yeah. There's not dancing on the ceiling, if that's what you were thinking. There's not.
You pan around.
It's Lionel Richie.
There's the plasma screen TV. There's a bookshelf. There's the aquarium. There's one of those upright lights. There's your clown art.
Is there anything underneath? Like, should I look under the couch? Anything under the couch?
Nothing. Nothing. Just comic books.
Comic books. Tales of finger eating. Dude, I mean, where else can you look? You look up, you look down, you look all around. Clearly, the dog must have done it. I'm gonna just shoot the dog first.
All right. You sure? Now I gave you a big clue there.
I looked up. I looked down. Where else can you look?
I described all the things in the room.
Yes.
Now we're in a room mystery.
Okay. All right. You said there's a couch. Uh-huh. Can I pull up the couch cushions? Anything underneath the couch cushions?
No, nothing there. Some granola bar wrappers.
Yeah. There's a stub for a Night and Day. The Tom Cruise, Cameron Diaz romp.
You said there's one of those upright lamps.
Yeah, there's a lamp.
Maybe let me tilt that down, look inside.
Dead bugs. Dead bugs. One falls in your eye. One falls in your tongue. Falls in your eye and you go, ah, then another one falls into your mouth.
Also, right, there's a movie stub for Rock of Ages, the Tom Cruise, Catherine Zeta-Jones musical spectacular.
Which is weird because I only saw that last night. And so, it's how odd that I would put that stub there. You mentioned clown art. Looking at the clown art, anything weird about that?
What kind of clown art? You're pretty freaked out about it.
What kind of clown art is it?
Like scary oil paintings of clowns, which is sort of sad faces.
Did I miss you? What else did you mention? I didn't hear anything else.
Bookshelf, aquarium. Television.
Aquarium. What kind of fish are in the aquarium?
Oh, you mean your piranha?
Oh my God. Someone was keeping a pet piranha?
In Chicago air parents thought their pit bull was to blame when they heard their 18-month-year-old daughter crying and discovered one of her fingertips had been severed. Turns out the culprit was a piranha the family kept in an aquarium. Doctors determined the bite wasn't from a dog after the girl was rushed to a hospital by ambulance. They actually had to go to the hospital, look at the bite, and go, no, your dog didn't do this. You already shot.
That'll be two dangerous pets that I'll get rid of.
Yeah, and so the father cut open the piranha, one of two piranhas. We don't know if he got it right on the first time.
Oh, my God. How do you catch how do you pull the piranha out of the aquarium knowing
it
hurts a finger?
It's
do you just set up a fishing lure?
Brian, it's called To Catch a Piranha. And you get Chris Hansen over and you set up a Craigslist thing. You're waiting for him to come in and say, so why are you nibbling on that finger? What were you planning on doing with it?
Have a lady finger. So Brian's at the hospital. They're looking at the bite, and you're like, ah, Bonnie, I'm sorry. We never should have got that pit bull, fully grown from the junkyard, been raised by drug dealers. We never should have got it. I'm glad I shot it. And the doctor looks at the bite, and it's like, this isn't a pit bull. And your daughter's like, Daddy, when can I go pet Ollie? It'll make me feel so much better.
You're like, sorry,
and there's
bro.
Like smoke wafting out of your pocket from the gun, the revolver you already used.
I brought the dog with me to the hospital just so I could shoot it and have quick disposal of the dog body.
Brian sticking his hand into the dog guts, trying to find the fingertip.
No, Brian, you actually shot the dog earlier, but you were using dry ice bullets.
There you go. That's why there's a second mystery. How did Ollie die? That's okay. What kind of idiot? This is double idiocy of having an 18-month-old and having a pit bull. And I know, I understand that there are people who are like, well, my pit bull's totally fine. But the fact is, it doesn't matter if it's a pit bull or not. Dogs are inherently dangerous around kids. They're inherently unpredictable. And there's been too many times that I've seen all different kinds of dogs that everyone is like, oh, there's no way he would murder. And then, you know, kid creeps him out the right way, backs him into a corner, and they snip at him. It's like, it doesn't matter. You should not. Dogs should be treated like loaded weapons around infants and children.
I just love the fact that here's a family that's they've got a pit bull they left alone with their 18-month-old child that this could happen. And then they've got a fish tank. And what did they decide to put in the fish tank? Because the pit bull wasn't enough. They go to the pet store like, we want a fish. Oh, we got the goldfish. No, what's like the pit bull of fish?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you leave out, I guess the anaconda that they had out in the back?
Oh, no, that's upstairs. And the rabid bats are in the attic.
Sure.
The anaconda's in the nursery, Brian. Get it straight.
And they were going to get a poltergeist, but it turns out that ain't real.
Yeah. Yeah, the anaconda is actually in the toy box in the nursery.
Yes. So, I mean, it's safe to say that these people are, I mean, like, I don't know. All of a sudden I felt a pang about calling them horrible parents, but like.
They're genuinely terrible parents.
Whenever you're in a situation where you don't know if it was the piranha or the pit bull that made your child, you are failed in parenting in some area. It's like, you're going to tell me having the circus chimp as a babysitter is a bad idea.
Maybe they just like pets that start with the letter P, and their other pet was a pink flamingo. Like, it got way more peaceful from there.
Let's say that is true. Does that make them any better of parents than we have been?
It makes them more alliterative.
All right. How about a break here?
Yeah. Folks, I do want to remind you that you can go ahead and sponsor this podcast by going to weirdthings.com/sponsor. $30 gets you your ad read right here on the podcast.
All right. Gentlemen, let's talk about ferrets.
You mean those ones that I almost thought ate the fingers off my imaginary future child?
Well, we've mentioned ferrets before because ferrets are kind of like, you know, they're kind of part cute, part rodent, kind of like, you know, they're right in that kind of like uncanny valley of animals.
Plus they smell bad, right? So it's like, you think they'd be cool pets, but then they smell bad, and they're still a little bit like they don't respect you. Not so
I thought
like
they didn't
dogs.
Have any smell at all.
They smell bad. Are you kidding? Ferrets? Like my buddy Gordon Prince got a ferret, and they worried about what name to call it, and after much deliberation, they decided they'd call it Elmo, and then within 24 hours, the name was Smelmo. And they've got a gland that makes.
Oh yeah, you get the gland removed, and that's what. Then they don't smell.
Yeah, well, correct.
I feel like there's been nothing. Oh no, wait. Was Ricky Tikki Tavi a ferret or a mongoose? Is there a difference between a ferret and a mongoose?
Yes, there's a very big difference. A mongoose will take on snakes.
How big of a difference is there, though?
A mongoose is much bigger. I thought.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just wondering. Like, are they like? I wonder how far apart they are.
Because I feel like. Like, I feel way better about ferrets. Like, I feel like ferrets are pretty cool creatures solely because of Ricky Tikki Tavi.
Oh, yeah, no, totally.
I think ferrets are cool because of the Beastmaster having two of them, being able to psychically control them.
I feel like they're pretty cool because they use them as torture implements on Game of Thrones.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so yes, ferret talk this week in ferrets here on the Weird Things Podcast.
Mongooses are actually related to cats in the cat family.
Really? They're feline?
They're in the Feliformia family.
Wow. Learn something new every day. Weird things, bringing you the knowledge.
Anyway, so my pick this week is Ricky Dicky Tavi.
My pick is the Beastmaster because he's got those two ferrets.
Me and Bri would like to bring you our new idea, Ferret Club, where we talk about projects that involve or possibly involve ferrets.
So here's a project involving ferrets.
Yeah.
So some scientists decided, you know what would be fun?
Ferrets.
Let's put some ferrets in some cages near each other. Okay.
That seems like a good place to
put it. I love science experiments that sound identical to ramblings of two meth addicts.
Yes. Well, it's like on the Andrew Main Stories podcast, I had the story about a scientist who actually gave cocaine to a squid.
Yes.
And that came about because I wrote a story about a squid addicted to cocaine. And then I wondered, did that ever happen? And thanks to science.
Yeah.
It did.
Man, so, could you imagine if you're that scientist, you're like, I've got one life's ambition. And that's to make sure I see what happens when every living creature on Earth gets cocaine.
Oh, I just like the idea they walk out there. What happened to the lab samples? Oh, the squid got it. Squid ate all of it. Squid was crazy. Squid was going nuts for it. I had to give the squid some cocaine because next thing you know, who's going to do that? So anyhow, how are you doing? What's going on? Hey, how are you doing? It's good to see you.
Is it too bright in here? Can we turn on the lights? Well, oh my God, why is it so dark? We better turn them up.
Let's go party.
Wait, all right, real quick, I do want to give a quick shout out. I was listening to the brand new Sword and Laser podcast that was recorded at Nerdtacular, and there was somebody in the back of the room that while they're doing their Audible read, they just asked the crowd, hey, what are you guys reading? What's worth listening to? And a dude in the back just screamed, anything by Andrew Main! Despite the fact that none of the books that are written by Andrew and narrated by me in audiobook form are available on Audible. Thank you to that guy who disrupted the Sword and Laser podcast.
I swear that wasn't me.
Not that you wouldn't be above paying that guy.
By the way, let me tell you, the people in Utah, they're very nice. Very I've heard. So you got some ferrets, and you're like, hey, you got the ferrets in these cages. And you're like, all right, it's kind of cool. And you're like, you know what? Let's go get some little swabs and go swab our ferrets. And take the swab and go put it in another ferret.
Well, when you say you mean from the nose?
Yeah, we'll give you the nose, sure.
All right. So you're essentially spreading cooties, a little ferret cootie experiment.
Exactly, back and forth.
I can see no way anything bad will ever come of this.
Now, every time you call them cooties, they do mutate a little bit.
What do you mean? They get sassy? They get a little fired up?
Well, the cooties infect the ferret, and then when the cooties take over the ferret's immune system, through the miracle of nature, there's a little bit of variation, a genetic mutation that occurs every time this happens.
When you say take over immune system, like are we talking like parasitic or
viral? Like they're viral cooties, Brian.
Okay. So they compromise the immune system, and then what kind of variety are we talking about? What kind of mutation?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that it didn't take that many times to go back and forth between. From when you were using a swab on the ferrets to remember those ferrets sitting in the cage looking at each other?
Yeah.
With open vents?
Wait, you're saying they were able to get something to go airborne just by swabbing it back and forth?
Yes, they could.
So I feel like we talked about a story similar to this, because wasn't there an ethical dilemma on whether or not they should publish their results? This isn't that same study, is it?
Well, this was the follow-up study to see if this could be done.
Man, what's going on in this laboratory? Calm down, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
So this was a test to see how quickly they could get this to happen through natural means.
I feel like this laboratory is so zany, it could be a sitcom.
So, anybody remember what the cootie was?
This was bird flu, right? What isn't it? Aerialized avian flu.
Now aerialized avian flu in ferrets.
Wow!
Right. Oh my God. We talked about that before, and then so they repeated the experiment. Now there's a push to sort of make all this available. So most of this information now is publicly available. Now people can know how to go do it. You know, And they got this delightful picture of these two ferrets. One's a white ferret, one's sort of a multicolored ferret. They've got this sort of grill work in front of them. And so now that it's airborne, now we talked about this. Now, what was our position as far as should this be allowed or not? Brian, what was your take?
I think my take was you can't stop the signal, and so you might as well make sure enough people hear it that they can take appropriate action. I think that's where I was at.
So full transparency, publish how you did it.
Yeah, I guess so. And of course, you don't want to advertise it and make everything easy, but you publicly, I think they're
like,
doing the
publish
right
it
thing.
In Farsi?
No, please don't. No, what I mean is like make the announcement very, very public, which they've done. Make the details very scientific so that you pre-qualify the kind of people who would the type of people who would be interested in weaponizing this usually don't tend to be the most scientifically literate types to begin with. So I think you've got a little bit of protection there, but outside of that, you can't stop them. If somebody wants to pay a couple million dollars to a scientist to breed evil, I mean, they're going to find someone.
Let's be honest, Brian, swabbing ferrets, a lot easier than enriching uranium.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but the fact is it's already there. It's already out there. And people need to know that it's this easy.
Well, there's an argument we say that, some of those intermediary steps, how much, what kind of agents do you use can make it that much more complicated for people to figure out.
Right.
It's like processing uranium. Anybody can sit down and read a textbook on how to do it, but the little nitty gritty gets to be very, very hard, and you have to reinvent that because some details are held back. How fast does it, have to spin, et cetera, all that. So there's
argument. Where do you find the number for the Libyans that you can meet in the Twin Pines Valley Mall?
I thought it was
Lone Pines Mall. Lone Pines Mall.
Lone Pines?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the whole, don't you remember? That's the whole joke is at first it's Twin Pines.
Oh, yeah.
It's Lone Pine because he ran over one of them.
Yeah. Yes.
So, Brian, the CDC says, Brian, we really appreciate your attitude on this transparency. Some people are like, we think you've got a – you're right on. We need a spokesperson.
Okay. They get Flamey Ferret, the six.
No, we want you, Brian. We want you to come do a show for us.
Oh, no. I see where you're headed here. You just need – and as a payment, all I need is a swab.
No, you don't need to do a swab. They want to give you a tour.
You could just talk to this guy, Larry.
So Justin and Brian,
yeah,
you bring Justin along.
Yeah, I'm on the road with you, Bri. We're doing the tour.
He's doing a go game for the CDC.
Hey everybody, you ready to learn about the CDC? We're gonna have a great time.
Justin's in their level 3 lab. They're wearing their hazmat suits. You win a free button. Clips it on.
So what is the story? Like, is the CDC, what is their position on this issue?
Well, it's a lot of big organization, but let's go back to the tour.
All right. So what do we see on the tour?
So we're going around like, all right, over here, this is where we work on rabies. You hear like, all right. You got over here is tuberculosis.
Right.
Okay.
Right, here's monkeypox.
With a bunch of monkeys.
Scratching themselves.
Yeah, sure.
Going, bring out your dead.
They're so diseased, they talk, but it's only in Monty Python quotes.
They had to give them human genes, and they only had nerd genes available, so yes. All they do is to make nerd jokes and talk about Firefly all day.
My favorite episode was the train.
Ah, Dr. Horrible, let's play it. So you're walking along and like, by the way, we're in biosafety lab level 3.
Okay. That sounds like a safe number. How many levels?
You're like, it's like Raccoon City here, right? And like, yeah, don't worry. Totally safe lab. Totally safe. Don't worry. And you see this lab over here?
Yeah.
This is where we're testing bird flu, by the way, which, that was a thing with the ferrets and all that.
Yeah.
You can see there's the facility. You can see through the glass. You can see the people working through there. And, why is air blowing out of that vent?
So wait a minute. So you're saying after they weaponized, did this happen? Did they made avian flu be airborne, not realizing that they had like central AC and they were spreading it all the way around?
Well, we're so excited that we've made this discovery that I'm just going to bake a pie and let it cool here on the sill.
was not in a bird flu lab. Okay, it was.
Did the CDC do this? This was the CDC.
Was supposed to be, you know, apparently it was in a lab with nothing harmful there, whatever, but it was a level 3 lab, and some tourists, they're taking some people on a tour, and they notice that there is an air leak coming out of a door that was sealed. They notice coming out of it, air's coming out of a vent that should not have been have air blowing out of it.
Whoops.
CDC says, don't worry, nothing to worry about, nothing to harm there. Back in 2008, it was discovered a high containment lab door was sealed with duct tape, which we all think duct tape's pretty awesome, kids, but not that awesome.
I mean, come on, you should at least use gaffer's tape.
Duct tape. What's funny is, like, I'm experienced enough with my tapes that I'm like, well, actually, gaffer's tape is better, but it's only threaded, and duct tape would be better. It's more closed and duct.
So USA Today did a search. They found an email, internal email, where CDC biologist, there's a wonderful name called Kismet Scarborough.
Wow.
Said the centers will do anything, ellipsis, to hide the fact that we have serious problems with the airflow and containment in this whole building. They have not been able to verify independently the email.
Do you think that this is really something where an entire government run system is just that ignorant of a potential major security flaw, or is this a case of one guy making hay to be a whistleblower? I mean, how serious do you think this is?
Well, these are two separate incidents. In one of them, we have people just happening by, a random tour in there sees this happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you got to say, okay, it wasn't a safety inspection. It was a random group of people that observed this. And so there are all sorts of ways you could try to extrapolate how often does this happen when nobody pays attention to it, et cetera. We don't know. But the idea that just some group there is looking like, hey, what's that? They're like, oh.
Oh, that?
That.
I don't know, but maybe you'd like a piece of this rhubarb pie I just made.
Hey, everybody, let's play a contest called Hold Your Breath.
Yeah. Let's play a contest that is entirely consists of me writing zeros on a check until you don't write an email that says this exists.
Oh, but we're a government agency and we can't do that.
No, but I can pay you in pie.
So do you think that, and I guess here's the problem, is let's say we did have a situation like that. The only people who could verify that it's definitely the CDC's fault would be the CDC. Everyone else would just, like, we get sick, and they're all like, I don't know how you got sick. Maybe it came from China? Did you look at China?
Yeah, I don't know how the oversight works there. I don't know what happens within the institution. And that is the problem. It's an important idea behind checks and balances is you don't want the people who are going to be held accountable for something being screwed up also being the people doing the investigation. And
yeah.
That gives you, and you know, when you find you've screwed up something, the first thing you do, you know, that's why we have whistleblower laws, is because the people in charge tend to want to say, well, let's not tell anybody, and we get, and that most times, you know, you get away with that stuff.
Yeah, only this time they get away with it. We're all dead of monkeypox.
Yes, and not the cool kind we described.
No.
The one that gives you Monty Python quotes.
One thin mint!
Spam, spam, spam.
Do we want to do a commercial break?
Yeah. Folks, I do want to go ahead and remind everybody that you can go ahead and get either Andrew Main's latest book, Hollywood Pharaohs, or Brian's latest book, Scam School Book 2, by heading on over to Amazon. Search for Scam School Book 2 or Hollywood Pharaohs. They're both great. I've read both of them, and they'll change your life.
Brian's has more pictures.
Yes.
Yeah, but yours has more pharaohs.
Yes, it's true. It's a tie, Brian.
We both win in two very important categories.
They're going to put us in cages where we face each other, and they're going to take swabs and go back and forth.
They're like, there, Brian, now you have just as many pharaohs as Andrew has pictures.
Yes, welcome to the swab off. Two swabs enter, one swab leaves. Swab the deck. Charles Swab. Stump the swab.
Hey, let's go around the table here. I want each of you to say something nice about planet Earth.
All right. Planet Earth is a real sassy lady for whom I like to live on and in.
Ryan?
I'm going to say of all the planets I've ever lived on, Earth would be the most significant.
Justin?
And recent.
I think planet Earth is a place where I think is just great, and I enjoy the food.
What makes Earth better to you than other planets?
I can breathe on it.
That's easy. No, well, there's that's one. But also, Earth only place mechanisms to create horrifying parasites. In the known universe, you cannot find horrific parasites except for here on Earth.
How hard have you looked elsewhere, Brian?
Did you try to touch those pots in that one cave? Because that's some pretty crazy parasite action.
Yeah, but then I immediately had sex afterwards for no apparent reason. She got pregnant.
Well, no, come on. They had sex for a reason. It was sexy time. That's why. You didn't need a reason to bang.
So, any other reason you want to make Earth feel good about itself? Tell it why it's better than all the other planets?
Earth, I'm sorry you're feeling down. Here's the thing. You've had a fantastic run. You are still covered in life. And as best we can tell, no matter how hard we try, we can't eradicate that life off of you. It just blooms forever. We were talking just the other day about how even if you get knocked up with a planetoid, it'll just send that life all over the universe through panspermia. So this is great. You got a special gift that may be shot through the stars, and we think you're super for it.
I'll tell you,
got humans.
We're still having fun, and you're still the one, planet Earth.
So Earth may have been feeling a little bit down, guys.
Oh, no, Earth.
Well, lady, we used to go like, hey, look at you, Earth. You're covered in water. You're awesome, right?
Oh, no, no. Well, I mean, you don't want to do that because, I mean, Europa's got a little more water than...
Yeah, we found that out. We're like, Europa's kind of probably got more water than you
now
do.
Now, why'd you have to bring that up, Bri? You know it's a sore subject.
Well, Earth brought it up again because Earth was like, well, at least I'm a planet.
Hoo-wee! Hot fire!
Now scientists are looking at the interior of Mars and have realized that Mars may have a lot more water than we realized.
No. Mars too?
So
well, at least Mars isn't geologically active, Earth. You're the only one. You've got hot magma flowing around. Don't mention Io.
Well, yeah. See, they look in the Earth's mantle, for example, they think has between 50 to 300 parts per million of water. Mars might have between 70 and 300 parts per billion.
Wait a minute.
When we try to look at the median part there might be a hell of a lot more water on Mars than we realize.
You want to know what, though? It makes sense because it probably comes from John Carter's crying after he saw how much his movie made.
Wait, it sounded to me like you're saying that Mars had, as a percentage, even more water than Earth. Is that no es posible?
As a percentage, Mars may have more water than Earth.
Oh, how's Earth going to take this?
Man, I'll tell you what. If there's enough water that you could set up a water park, I'm for Brian sending his crazy suicide astronaut up there.
And you guys are all like, you're expecting him to be the saddest mission ever. Instead, every day, he's just like nonstop. Yeehaw!
Exactly. Woo-hoo! I'm on the lazy river.
So what's left? So for Earth, like, to be honest, the first thing that comes to mind is, of course, you know, well, you said the breathable atmosphere, which maybe that's gone, you know, that's probably solid, but there's nothing in the breathable atmosphere that's exclusive to Earth. You got life, but now we think that there might be some version of it possibly on Titan, some compatible version on Europa, and who knows with all these other planets we're finding.
Yeah, who knows where that crazy bald MMA fighter dissolved into an ocean?
So, the moon, by the way, we're finding in craters there. We're looking at how things light reflects there. And we actually have one of the craters mapped out where we'd probably go looking for water on the moon, and we're finding there are places where there could just be like vast reservoirs of frozen water just waiting on the moon.
Is this this water, I assume, is this is only stuff that I guess accretes there from all the comets that hit, all the meteors. You add up all those little chunks of ice, and pretty soon you got some decent vapor on Mars. Aren't these like largely in the shadows? Because otherwise, the solar, the sun will just sublimate.
This is in like the rock itself.
What?
It's like you start digging down, and it's a moist cake.
So this isn't like an underground river, like in Ghostbusters 2?
With a river of pink slime.
The pink slime river. Also, as far as the moon goes, a rat bit my sister the other day, and there's water on the moon.
So, how much water is there? I don't even know where to begin with this. So you got water on Mars, you got water on the moon. There's no water on Venus or Mercury, though.
Well, it would be Venus, it would be as vapor in the atmosphere.
Oh, man, if Venus had water, too, Earth couldn't handle that.
So do we just have a fundamental shifting in, like, that we just generally underestimate water on other planets?
You know, we're used to the idea that you just sort of look and then you see water. You know, oh, it's blue. Look at it. I mean, it's funny. You look at how we described the Earth in pictures and artwork prior to the first photographs of the Earth from space, and, you know, we didn't even get the color right.
Yeah.
But now.
Yeah, sure.
You know, is sea green, you know, whatever. Now we look and we understand, oh, that's what water looks like from space. Now we know. Are there any other blue planets like us?
Nope.
Not quite. Neptune's kind of tingy, you know, and this and that. And then, like, you know, they're sitting there drinking their, you know, their martinis, and the guy's like, get rid of these ice cubes. Anyhow, what else should we be looking for? And I'm like, wait, what if it's frozen?
Oh.
Is that the problem? Is that for all the water we're looking for, we don't think to look for ice?
No, or of our scientists use ice cubes in their martinis like goons?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, come on, get it together, scientists.
So the point is they, I mean, we knew that water came from comets, and we knew that these big balls of what we presumed, you know, were probably ice and maybe methane flying around. Just the idea that how prevalent was water in the rest of the solar system, because we had this idea which water was water, and then we forget that you put a bunch of water on a moon and then it freezes over and you can have a ton of it. You know, we lose, you know, a couple tons of our atmosphere, you know, every hour, but you can even have a moon that's trillions of tons in size and it can still have a lot of water for a long time.
And the reason, of course, that this is so important is less. If you're interested in man getting off planet, getting around, water is the most important resource, not only for, I guess, both for fuel and for life, and because you can use it to generate atmosphere. And so it's obviously very expensive to take with you. So finding any place we can find water, there's a lot we can do.
Yeah, we very much understand we can build machines now that can take water and solar power and process it into hydrogen, oxygen. We don't do it because it's a ridiculous amount of energy compared to just using, you know, oil to do that process, or just using, you know, conventional energy production. But we don't have access to that energy. Some solar panels and some electrodes, and you can start cracking water and making those, you know, water and oxygen, hydrogen and oxygen out of water. And then you need, you know, air for your air supply to replenish the oxygen that you consume and turn into CO2 that you don't bother scrubbing or whatever. And so, yeah, the fact that, you know, we're finding this on Mars now is very exciting. It's kind of like this plot line of Dune. You know, Dune's this desert planet. They go look in the caves and, like, guess what? We've been storing up all the water.
Yeah. And then randomly we'll make it rain.
Yeah. Speaking of making it rain, let's go to our commercial break.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what, folks, go buy a sponsored spot. These sound a lot better when I'm talking about you. And hopefully, in the actual recorded version, we'll have a sponsored spot that I can put instead of this ad read. Wink!
Gentlemen, do we want to do picks?
Yeah, I got a pick.
All right, we're not stopping you.
Pick to pick with us.
So, on my flight, which turned out to be like a 12-hour hilarious journey to Dallas last week, I decided to get into
You were leaving from Mumbai, right?
Yes, from Mumbai. No, from San Francisco, which is a really stupid story. But I got the 20th anniversary edition audiobook of Heir to the Empire, the first in the Grand Admiral Thrawn trilogy, right? It was the one trilogy.
Yes. And
they did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Brian, I talked to you because I didn't know that. No, I didn't know when the 20th anniversary was. It was just the one available on Audible.
I think it would have been very recent because I remember, like, I first saw it right after I graduated high school. So, you know, early. I think it came out in 91, 92. I'm making that up, but.
Well, but you had mentioned to me that you had listened to an audiobook version of this book and you were very underwhelmed, right?
I was, and this is coming from somebody who loved that story. And the only reason I listened to the audiobook is because I wanted to experience it again. But I found the reading to be so dry and so boring and lifeless that I gave up on it, even though I wanted to re-experience the story that I already knew I loved.
Now, I'm kind of extended here technically, so I can't look up who the reader is. But let me just say, this is one of the best audiobooks I've ever listened to, not only because it has a very specific set of challenges and advantages to it. It has challenges in that you are talking about characters that we know, that the internet knows so well. It's hard to be the kind of dinner theater version of Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Princess Leia, you know, stuff like, you know, R2-D2, Lando Calrissian, who are all players in this book. But this guy does a great job of kind of just doing serviceable enough. They're their own takes on it. He doesn't try to just be, you know, Rich Little and do impressions, but they're like the voices enough that you can kind of lose yourself in it. And normally I'm not a gigantic fan of audio effects and stuff like that involved in the reading. I kind of would just rather have somebody read it to me and just kind of let their vocal performance carry it.
Right.
But in this book, when you have the ability to have sounds like the lightsabers and R2-D2 chirping and the soaring scores that we all know and love of the Star Wars universe. It is fantastic. It's so well done. It's great. His Grand Admiral, Admiral Thrawn voice is just amazing. So I highly recommend it. I'm about halfway through it now. I'm loving the story. I think it's awesome. I know we've talked about it before in this podcast, but get all up into it. It's The Heir to the Empire, book one. And you can get it on audio.
Well, I got two things for you. First of all, it's narrated by Mark Thompson, who I'm not familiar with. But most importantly, how much are you loving the character of Grand Admiral Thrawn?
Well, you know, it goes to show you, and really in listening to it and experiencing just a great Star Wars story, it really just does nothing but sort of heighten the disappointment I've had for the prequel stuff and like the excitement I have for the franchise going forward, because like, you know, yeah, they had three stinker movies, but like there's so much that you can do with this universe. There's just so many interesting elements. And this was just such a fantastic, a combination of something like, hey, what if, you know, there's in the broken Imperial fleet, there's the Rommel of the Empire, you know, that's still out there wreaking havoc. And, you know, it's just a brilliant idea.
I bought the books when they first came out. I saw it in the back of like Starlog magazine. And this was from a period when you did not have, other than there was like Splinter in the Mind's Eye and then like three Han Solo novels that were published in the early 80s. There just was no Star Wars fiction back in the day. It wasn't like you could go to the bookstore and find entire sections from, you know, ranging from X-Wing squadrons to Clone Wars to stories about medical units. There was nothing. And when this came out, super stoked, I bought all of them. I have all three of them somewhere. First editions in the hardcover. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. And it was just, you know, it's like, what happens after Jedi?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. It's not a tacked on, you know, made up hokey, like, I don't know, we're trying to squeeze some money out of this. You got to remember, at the time, these stories existed to fill a spiritual void in Star Wars fans. It's like people don't remember that in the early 90s, you could, without irony, say, hey, remember Star Wars? And people would be like, yeah, man, too bad that's gone now. And then and these happened, and it spawned this giant onrush of the glorious expanded universe that Lucas later disowned.
I'm going to do my pick.
Go ahead.
Go for it.
On the subject of George Lucas, I saw this on Netflix, and I kind of was like, do I want to watch this? This kind of issue is sort of done for me. I'm at peace with everything. Do I really want to get into this? And I'm like, you know what? Why not? Because I went on a kick. I watched all three of the original prequels. I watched the first, the original three, then I watched the prequels and all that stuff. And I've been in Clone Wars, as I mentioned last time, and digging Clone Wars. It's a documentary called The People versus George Lucas.
Oh, yes. I loved this.
And it was, at first I'm like, I don't need to see a hate fest because I love George Lucas. George Lucas made my childhood wonderful. I mean, you know, the three movies that he made probably for his kids and we were invited to go see along were not necessarily for me, but, you know, as a guy who likes Clone Wars and a lot of other stuff that's come out and et cetera, I'm not one of these people that's like, I may have said some things in the past. I may have written some angry letters. I may have gone to some secret meetings and joined some organizations and may have said some things that, you know, would get me in trouble. But I love George Lucas. I'm a big fan. George Lucas is a hero to me. And I'm like, do I want to watch this thing? And I enjoyed the documentary because it's a very cathartic thing because you get to hear people talk about their frustrations with the prequels and sort of where things go. But it ended in a really, really good place. It kind of was this sort of release.
I was going to say, my experience, I liked it because it started off as such a love letter to what a significant experience Star Wars was. And then gave a very good voice to that frustration that many of us had with the prequels. And then it ended with this analysis that it's like, hey man, he's not a demon. He's not an angel. He's a guy who's doing the best he can.
He's a guy that invented Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and disappointing movies can't undo the fact that we still think Chewbacca and Han Solo are awesome. It's not like, oh, I'm never making a Han Solo reference again. You know,
right. You know, right.
Bad feeling about this.
When I was at the when we were at the Star Wars celebration, we saw people wearing Han shot first shirts that were like official merchandise.
Yeah.
So, People versus George Lucas, it's available on Netflix instant streaming. By the way, I will be going to Star Wars Celebration, the big official Star Wars convention at the end of August. Kevin Smith is going to be speaking there, and I just got my ticket for that event too. So, yes.
Oh, awesome.
Dude. Well, this time it'll be reversed. So this time I'll be in San Francisco, and you'll be going to Celebration.
Yes.
Awesome. So my pick is 6 months later than it should be. Because for Christmas, your friend of mine, BCT, John Tilton, got me a digital comic on the Comixology app. He got me the first collection of the Joe Hill written series, Lock and Key. And if you don't know, Joe Hill is, do you guys know that name?
Nobody famous.
Yeah, yes. Well, exactly. He's Stephen King's son. And it was exquisite. I finally downloaded it and read it, and not only did that experience keep me from returning my new iPad, because that's when I saw how good the Retina display really looks on comics. I'm not kidding you. Like, I was thinking, like, I don't know, it takes longer to charge, and the battery doesn't last near as long. I'm just going to return it. I don't really need this. And then I read the Comixology app, and I was just like, oh, so pretty. But the story is, number one, it starts off with a very strong punch. And if you read it and you think it's too much for you, I encourage you to stick through it because it's in the aftermath of this opening tragedy that these young adults and children of this family do some self-discovery and begin to – it is you can tell that – even if you read a lot of Stephen King and you didn't know that Joe Hill was related to him, you would see so many similar themes. The obsession with doors that can go anywhere and the idea of mysterious places calling to you and the idea of things moving in cycles where echoes of what the parents did are revisited by children. It is very, very good. The art is utterly gorgeous, and it's not that expensive, too. I think you could do the whole series, get caught up to date. If you get the four trades and then the rest of them, I think I spent less than $50 total. And it's fantastic. Lock and key. I highly recommend it.
You know, my new coworker and roommate, Brett the Amtrak Aroundsville, has like imagine if you lived with a Mormon and they just banged on your door every morning and asked you if you had accepted the truth and, you know, have you heard the good news? Like, that's how much he's given me the lock and key book and just is like, read it. Did you read it today? Did you read it? Why didn't you read it? Your homework this weekend is to read it. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to reading it. I've heard nothing but amazing things.
Yeah, it does. It also does that very good job. I think it does that dance that, again, Stephen King has always been good at. And I felt like for the most of its run, Lost did a very good job of setting up fascinating questions and making sure to, every time they gave you an answer, open up two much more interesting questions. So it's like you start off, imagine the way I picture it is you start off and you just see these squares, and some are light or some are dark, and you're like, what on earth are these squares for? And then you get the answer as it pans out, and you realize that this is a chessboard, and you're seeing two incredibly interesting figures playing chess. Well, now you got your answer, but you have a much more interesting question. Who are these two guys? What is this game they're playing, and what are the forces behind them? And then you pan out a little bit bigger, and you find out that they represent two very big interests, and now you know they're playing a game of chess, but you're much more interested in this bigger story of, well, what are these two different interests, and why are they at war with each other? And you get that with Lock and Key, kind of like you did with Lost.
When do we get to the Skittles Cave?
The Skittles Cave, yes.
So, Joe, I'm going to close with this. I don't know if you heard this. Did you hear this audio? You know what this is?
What? Oh, that's...
Hearing that,
what is this?
Now imagine that getting creepier.
What is the context of this? Where did this come from?
Take a guess.
Well, it sounded at first like you were playing the intro to Lost over a shabby microphone, but then it started to sound like maybe the squealing of some kind of like a drill bit on rock or something.
I would like to think that it's the personal soundtrack of Philip Glass's Pony Play Dungeon.
What's that?
Nothing. It's prog rock.
What we're going to do is I'll send Justin the link to this, and we'll put, I'll put a link here on the webpage. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a old school dial-up modem slowed down 700%.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Because it sounded ethereal and almost beautiful.
It is. And it's, that's, you know, there's this, When we look out at the universe and we look at these planets, we look at these other solar systems, we look at our own moons and we look for things that we recognize as life, or we look for patterns, we have a particular frame of reference. We have a human-centric frame of reference. Yet if we just listen to the sound of whales, you hear something that's melodic that maybe plays at a different speed for their frame of consciousness. We know elephants can communicate through ultrasonics and have their own kind of whale songs, if you will. And then when you listen to something as simple digital.
Now I hear it.
That at 700% slowed down just sounds like Philip Glass. And then you imagine, what are we missing out there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my favorite scene in The Elegant Universe, the DVD of the PBS production, is this scene that opens with Brian Greene giving a lecture, and he's, you know, running through a bunch of equations, and he's talking through, you know, the way a particle of light travels and explaining, you know, the sine wave, whatever. And then and he turns back, he's like, are you getting this? And then it, and the camera cuts to his golden retriever just sitting there patiently staring at him. And he brings up the idea that what if, you know, no matter how hard I try, this dog will not understand particle physics, and because his brain just is not wired to comprehend it. He says, what if the human mind is just not wired to ever comprehend the nature of the universe? And that is a simultaneously mind-blowing and terrifying possibility for me.
Yeah. I think, you know, there may be some mysteries we'll never be able to see because of the scale at which we look at them. I think that one of the beautiful things about the human mind is that we deal in abstracts, and it allows us to deal and wield very, very big, powerful concepts without having to understand the minute details of them. And that's why we get led astray in our search for patterns. But there is that, you know, we're only going to know what we bother to ask or look for.
Yeah.
Or slow down 700%.
It's amazing. So
that's awesome. That is so dope. That's so crazy.
It's been weird.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.